Hello, everyone, and welcome to Friday Nights In with Farmyard Ales. This is a brand new concept. I'm here with Danny Ellidge, who's the Executive Director at Farmyard Ales. How are you doing, mate?
Oi, oi. Yeah, not too bad, mate. How about yourself?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Back by popular demand, we've been speaking a lot to each other recently, haven't we?
Yeah, hopefully I'll be a bit more sober this time.
You got over that hangover?
Yeah, it took a while. People don't realise, the listeners don't realise that was a 4.5 hour drinking session condensed into 1 hour.
Yeah, so a lot of people got in touch and said, like, how much did you edit of that? Because it just went from having a few drinks and then you were both steaming, like, instantly. I was like, yeah, it did take 11 hours to
edit. Yeah, it was a bit like that. I thought I'd have a few beers beforehand to warm myself up and didn't realise how much we'd be drinking. But yeah, it was a good laugh, and that's why we're back here now.
Great night, exactly, great night. This is something that we've obviously collaborated together on, and what we're going to be doing, using Danny's knowledge and expertise and contacts in the industry, every single month we'll be getting a new producer on, whether it be a beer producer, a gym producer, telling them a little bit about obviously ourselves and what we do, but more importantly, they're going to be telling us about what they're doing. And obviously, we had Underwood Collective on recently, didn't we, Dan?
Yeah, that's right. So Underwood Collective is a couple of guys that are doing some gin based out in Leeds, guys called Tom and Ellis. I've worked with Tom on a number of things. We were supposed to do a big festival last year, like a 1,000-person music festival. Tom was helping us work on that. Tom's also been working on a gym brand with his friend Ellis, who they started a bar in Leeds called Poison. Mm. And then since then, since the lockdown, obviously that meant they couldn't work the bar. So they've developed their own gym brand and they started working on cocktails as well.
Wow, that Poison bar looks like a place I'd love to go to, by the way. It's a shame it's no longer a thing.
Absolutely, but hopefully we'll be able to get a little pop-up started and we can get all the guests from the podcast there, and we'll do that whenever that may be.
Without a doubt. I really like them too, by the way. Great guests. Just the whole ethos about being eco-friendly and being different. The ceramic bottle, you know, it's empty, obviously. It went within like 2 days.
Yeah. I think I've got my empty one here, actually.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I actually really, really enjoyed Underwood Gin. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of gin brands out there, and like, they've been popping up all over the place in the last 8 years, to the point where, like, when I used to work in hospitality, I'd have someone, a different person every week that'd be like, at first it'd be like, I've got Lancashire gin, then it'd be, I've got this gin, and then I've got Great Eccleston gin, and then I've got this, and it'd be getting narrower and narrower and narrower and narrower each time. So it's a very difficult market to get into, but I think these guys have really nailed the recipe. I think they've got a unique selling point in terms of, like, it's maybe the birch sap. I think the bottle is a great bit of initiative. I think they've put the money into the right places. I think they've done everything right. There's a lot of gin brands out there that are making it in the, you know, they're making it in the kitchen, they're making it in the dining room, and they're just kind of cutting corners. These guys aren't doing that. You know, they're doing everything proper. You know, they're spending the money to make sure everything's done correctly. You know, they've got years in experience in hospitality, and they're just doing things correctly. You know,
we'll see them as soon as we can for a drink in person, I'm sure. But in the meantime, I'll just keep ordering their gin, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
We actually caught up with Ellis and Tom earlier last week. This is what they had to say. Tom, Ellis, welcome to A Raise in the Bar presents Friday Night In with Farmyard Ales. How are you both doing?
Awesome. Really good.
Really good, thank you.
Good stuff. So, guys, what have you been up to over the past few months? Because I imagine you've had a very busy one transitioning.
Yeah, it's been a long game of whack-a-mole, hasn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it has, yeah.
Yeah, just constantly. I guess it's a combination of spinning plates, putting out fires, and trying to develop a big range of new products and stuff. But
yeah, that's it. Seems to be that way across the industry. To be honest, Danny, you're obviously from Farmyard Ales. What you've probably experienced a few similar things, haven't you?
Yeah, you've just got to turn on a sixpence, really. So every time a new legislation comes out, a new guideline or whatever it may be, you've got to change and adapt, really. But it seems like you guys have done that really well, and you come up with a variety of different products, one being the gin that we've got today.
Yes, I think it is. I think we're doing the same as you guys. We sometimes we sit there and have a few beers or a few gins, and as you do, as you're drunker, you get more ideas seem to flow.
Yeah, and
then we brainstorm a lot, and then we're like, right, but like you say, it's the concept of being able to say, right, let's produce a gin to actually getting it over the line. There's just so many nuts and crannies. Like the worst bit we found on a bottle, you see is a basically a tax, like a little, it's like a little symbol here. Can you okay. see it? It's just basically says that your duty alcohol has been paid.
Okay.
Now you would think you could be able to stick that label anywhere, but you can't. It has to be physically on the bottle. So our first round of labels, we thought would be really canny and cut a circle in.
Okay.
Sticker in through the label, but turns out you can't do that. It has to be on the bottle. So we got 2,000 labels printed, and there was no good. It's like, right, okay, let's start again.
It's kind of reminiscent of Angostura with the famous oversized label. They ordered the first batch of labels that were too big for the bottle, and they ended up just saying, well, it's too late, we got to put them on, and it stuck. So I don't think we're going to stick with this, but certainly, you know, it's out there. It's a history in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, it's going to be a learning curve for you. Well, you won't do it again, will you? You won't do it again. Yeah.
We've certainly been there with our bits and pieces, but there's so, like, people think, like you say, oh, we'll go and make a gin, but you don't realise all the hoops you've got to jump through, you know, so much legislation, paperwork. It needs to be this size font and that size this and this size that.
Yeah.
And also, but, you know, you get there, you know, you keep going.
Yeah. And rigorous testing and development and flavour profiles and all that. Obviously, we all dedicated to craft and flavour and quality and trying to get that nailed. And it's a long process, isn't it?
What sort of sets your gin out from every other gin, I guess? Because obviously there's quite a few out there.
I'll hand you over to Ellis for this.
Yeah, I guess, it was actually Tom who suggested to step into the gin in the first place. And it got me kind of thinking of how we could make it different, because as a bartender, I've touched a million gins, and you know, I spoke to a million people, reps, about different gins. Mm. So I know the market has a lot of gin on it, so it needed something to pierce through and be different. So that was a lot of words thrown on the drawing board. We had some ideas towards the start, which were a little too abstract. I think there was had an idea of going down the Sacred Nine road, which is a Sacred Nine Anglo-Saxon herbs. Mm. But honestly, my kitchen was transformed into a little tasting laboratory with all kinds of infusions going on. And honestly, the Sacred Nine gin was terrible. So it proves, like, the more you back yourself into a corner in a concept, it might sound cool, but ultimately it has to taste delicious. We went back to the drawing board a bit. We went over a dry gin recipe, built a profile of 12 different botanicals. I did a bit of trial and error there. But it wasn't enough. We wanted to do something a little more. So we kind of took a leap of faith and said, right, well, we've got this range of botanicals, which have got a beautiful balance. Mm. Let's vamp it up. Let's increase the weight of botanicals 3 times. Which just means it stands up to all the flavour that's knocking around in the gin world right now. Gin has become such a customizable thing. You've got so much flavoured tonics, exotic garnish suggestions. The gin really stands through all that really nicely. And then the birch sap was really, I've worked with birch sap quite a lot down in Poison. I think it's a really beautifully delicate thing. And is vastly different from, say, maple syrup, what we know as. Birch sap is really clean, really fresh, and very subtly sweet. You smell it in the glass, it smells like water with a little touch of Werther's Original. It's beautiful stuff. We took the gin that comes fresh off the still at 90%, and then instead of diluting it with water, we dilute it with the birch sap. And with the subtle sweetness in the sap, it kind of acts as a seasoning to help all the flavors kind of balance and come through. And that was it, really, the trifecta of that. But yeah, it's really nice. I'm really pleased with how it's turned out. And actually, the rested with on the bottle is the amount of time that we do actually rest it, which surprisingly I found has made a big difference in the quality of the gin. Everything settles down and everything just bleeds in together nicely. It's a really nice, elegant gin.
Obviously, kindly, we've got some here, and
yeah. So, what do you think?
It's really nice. I know it's like what you meant with the word as original. Then, by the way, nice. I mean, I'm a big gin fan. I'm that typical guy who has really got on board with the gin boom over the past few years. Never used to drink it at all. Didn't used to like tonic water, but I will now drink beer. Danny's helped me out a lot now because I'm drinking craft lager rather than drinking
stuff. Help my sales out.
Absolutely.
That's it.
But gin, yeah, gin is it's either beer or gin for me, in all honesty. And you're right, it's a saturated market now, isn't it? And there's so much on offer. You've got to have a really, really good taste in gin to, you know, I guess, be successful, haven't you?
Yeah,
I think not only that, you've got to have a good taste in gin, but you've got to stand out in terms of your marketing, your branding, and sort of your story. And I think, am I right in saying you guys are the only people that make gin with birch water?
At the moment, yeah.
Well, yeah. So I think that's such a unique thing. And then the bottle itself, the way it ties in with the Underwood brand into the birch, the bottle itself is like this porcelain bottle. I don't know if you guys want to talk about that, but I think that's a cracking bit of marketing.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, this is just, it really stands out, the ceramic. We owned Dinard. Me and Tom did a lot of back and forth, didn't we, about what receptacles to use. And we explored ceramic quite a bit and glass as well.
I think our biggest hurdle was getting over, usually when you see a gin bottle, you can see the liquid inside.
Yeah.
So the consumer market is, as you know, with anything, any branding or anything on the shelf, it's the first thing you see it. So we was a bit um and ahhing about, well, people aren't going to know what kind of liquid inside. Is it white? Is it clear? Is it pink? Is it blue? That was the first hurdle to get over. But once we got a bottle in our hand, it was like, actually, no, that's something a bit unique and special. And then we took time to find someone who could laser engrave them, so they all get laser engraved, which is nice. Again, it's another touch and feel. But yeah, I think it's back to Alice, but I think it's just about that whole sense of you can reuse the bottle. It's not just a one-time thing you can do.
That's a great looking bottle as well. I like the fact that it's different to a glass bottle. Well, how many other gins on the market use a ceramic bottle, do you know?
There's a few, I can't know, Gin Soul, I think it is. They use a white ceramic bottle. Looks brilliant, really pure, really bright. And I think there's probably going to be other gins out there that doesn't, and nothing springs to mind straight away, but yeah, ceramic is being used and it is on the radar for a lot of these companies. I think a lot of companies are looking at using ceramics more. There's a lot of eco benefits that go alongside using ceramic. The main thing we've all got to be aware about ceramics are that they can't be recycled in the same way as glass or metal. You can melt glass down and reform it, whereas ceramic, you can only downcycle it. It can still be reused, but not in the same way as glass. But the energy used to produce ceramic is just so far less than glass, which is actually really damaging to the world and, you know, the fuel-hungry furnaces that it needs. Ceramic is of the earth as well. I'm sure, well, glass is as well, but yeah, it's looking at, once something scales up, how to reduce that impact, fuel, and also the weight. The ceramic is lighter, which means if you're, you know, you're shifting big volumes of it, it's gonna save a lot in the long run.
I think it's on everyone's radar at the moment as well, isn't it? I think everyone's a bit more conscious about the footprint that they're leaving on the environment. Me and Danny were obviously talking about it before. We love the whole ethos behind the brand. Danny, is there anything that you do at Farmyard Ales to kind of, you know, reduce your carbon footprint, if you will?
Yeah, so I mean, the vast majority of our stuff goes into cans. We do have a little bit of stuff that goes into bottles. That's just because my granddad won't drink out of a can. But the vast majority goes into cans, and they're obviously infinitely recyclable. We do all our canning ourselves as well, so that means we're not shipping vast amounts of beer across the country to get canned, only for it to then come back. So that saves on that. And then also all our spent grains get fed straight to the cows. So we're recycling all that. And then you've got, you know, if you want to get more in depth, there's things like when we're using the hot liquor tank to make the beer, when we then cool down that beer, that heat transfer is then used to reheat the hot liquor tank again. So you're getting this sort of endless cycle of, obviously it's not 100% efficient, but the heat that's been taken out in order to cool the beer is then being transferred back into the kettle to make it, you know, keep the heat. So yeah, it's all about trying to be as efficient as you can and trying to just be as eco as you can and be as conscious of it, really.
Mm. I think I need to probably step up my... I eat a lot of meat, and I've got a lot of mates who are now like fully vegan and, you know, saying that I should try different things. I've started drinking oat milk. I mean, that's a big change for me because I'm normally like...
Get off the Oatly. Big Trump supporters. You need to change brands.
I try and make a change and then something like that happens. So all right, I'll change Oatly. I'll go to somewhere else. I want to know a little bit more about the reason behind the name and your logo. So Tristan Tree. There we go. So what's that concept about?
So, I mean, I guess it starts with the logo itself was the original logo for the... Fells Cocktails, which is a company we started back in 2016 together.
Okay.
With that logo's kind of stuck with us. And it's obviously, you can probably tell it's got some rustic Nordic influence there. I think as we made the shift into Underwood Collective, the rune took a bit more of a layer of meaning behind it, and this links into the Trysting tree, which is it's an old term which basically means a trusted meeting point within a community, and it would be a landmark tree, the big old oak at the top of the hill, or the weeping willow at the near the river or something. It would be a place that would be familiar in the community, where people would just meet. It would be that trusted meeting point. What we're trying to do here is be more than just a gin brand or a spirits brand. We want to cast the net out and just make it a collaborative project. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be a long burner, I believe. We're obviously still quite fresh, but I think establishing that concept now is like the way we need to be going. And it's exciting. I'm really looking forward to... getting this on the road, that's what behind the Trysting Tree, basically.
Like it. I wish. I mean, at the moment, I'd probably get arrested if we all went to a Trysting Tree at the moment because social distancing and stuff. I'd take that now. Standing in the tree and having a socialisation session. Yeah. But no, it's a really interesting concept. You keep talking about obviously the collaboration that you're doing with, like, you know, individuals, businesses, etc. And that's another part of the ethos that you know, myself and Danny really mm-hmm. like. So, I guess what does the future look like for Underwood then?
I think it looks good. It looks bright. Everyone that seems to come in contact with the bottle or the brand and seems to be getting behind, like, the ethos and the actual physical contact with the bottle, which is good. Currently, B2B business is not great due to the fact that a lot of it's closed.
Yeah.
So that's another hopefully strong arm our part of our business strategy that we're not being able to get off the ground.
Yeah.
Stay away. But consumer wise, we're going through the second batch now, which is it's a confident sign. But like you say, it's January. A lot of people there. It's a funny time. It's a funny time in the market. We're seeing really good growth. Everyone that gets onto it, getting a lot of recommendations off people, which is good.
Good.
So the only thing we can do is, like you say, it's just going forward, being more of a collective, doing stuff like this. Your podcast, we're very grateful for. Yeah, it's just building that brand and getting people to trust it and move forward with it.
Love it. Love it. I guess I've got to ask you this question. I asked Danny on his podcast before we got comatosed. But what are your thoughts on dry jam?
Funny enough, we've actually just created our first non-alcoholic spirit. So, nice. Yeah, the market is growing. I reckon it's a 30% year-on-year kind of market where people are going. We're not against it. If people have a bit of a reset and there you go, it's... I think it's a lockdown's a big, it's had a big, bigger effect than we've all realised mentally. Pubs were a good, stable mental institute for a lot of the countries, a lot of where people went who were lonely. That was their kind of interaction. So, I'm still having a few drinks. So I'm not really on the bandwagon, but I take my hat off to anyone who can go for it for a full month. But
I've been trying to get updates from my followers through the podcast on dry jan, and it sounds like a lot of people had the intention to do it initially, as you can imagine. But as the weeks have gone on, the percentage between, you know, failure and you're still doing it right now is just shot up towards failure, because I think on the back of the latest lockdown announcements and everyone's feeling...
It's not the year for it, is it?
It's not the year for it. It's not. Well, you were doing Tri-Jan, weren't you, Dan?
Yeah, just sort of like, it's just a bit of a spin on it, really. Obviously, January is always a bit of a quieter year for the drinks industry, but just sort of saying, you know, you don't have to cut out to zero. And obviously, everyone has a big boozy one over Christmas, but rather than going dry, maybe just cut down a bit. But maybe rather than having 3 pints of generic lager, have, you know, 1 pint of something different, something artisanal, rather than buying a litre of Gordon's, why don't you go and buy a smaller bottle of something crafty from your local gin producer or whatever, yeah. You know, and try something a bit different. You don't have to drink in the same volumes, but maybe try the same quality, improve the quality.
Yeah, it's just a bit more quality over quantity, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I started doing that with red wine. I got to quite drink a lot of red wine, and I was buying really cheap red wine.
Yeah.
And then my mate pointed out to me, says, why don't you, instead of just trying to drink 3 bottles of red wine, just go and buy one nice bottle? And mm-hmm. It's changed my whole concept of how to do it. And that's what I've started doing. So I don't drink very often through the week. So when the weekend comes, I just go treat myself to a nice bottle of red wine.
Yeah.
And the wood dry gin. Drink that a lot of that as well. That's standard.
So we're going to be looking at the new vineyard soon then, are we? The new Underwood vineyard. Is that coming
up? Yeah. I don't know about growing it in Cumbria, though. I don't think the weather's quite there yet.
No. A few more years of global warming, maybe.
Yeah. Might need to cut back on all the eco-friendly stuff you're doing, Laz, if you want that. You mentioned before Poison Cocktail Room. So sounded like, from what I've seen on socials, you know, there was someone saying, you know, I'm forever in debt for the cocktail taste, the menu that you did for my girlfriend's birthday kind of thing. And there were so many nice comments about the amazing times we had there. For the listeners that don't know about the Poison Cocktail Bar, what was that?
Yeah, it was a super eclectic, tiny little spot. It had 18 seats in it. I don't know. What do you reckon, Tom? How could you sum Poison up?
At some point, it was below the stairs, so you wouldn't know it was there. You had to walk through a jazz cafe to get to it. You wouldn't know it's on the street. But the atmosphere was just electric. It was one of those places where Ellis will be making you a cocktail behind a bar, and because it's only 18 seats, he'll be talking to you about it to the person at the back of the room.
Wow.
We really went to town on the bar. The bar was an open top bar, so all his showmanship was above the bar. He couldn't hide anywhere. And we also created just different things. Like, we used to do our own ice. Ellis had this fascination of blocked ice. Yeah, he got a bit obsessed with it at times. He would get really upset if there was like the smallest bubble in his like huge block of ice. And then he'd just get this massive, like, people would be chatting away, and then he'd just get this massive sore out from behind the bar. And he'd just be like, and then like hammering it, and people just like, but yeah, it's a real real special place. It was, everybody felt welcome. Yeah. Everyone that come downstairs, Ellis would come from behind the bar. Hey, how are you? You're all right? Take your coat from you. You got a nice little glass of Prosecco on the way here. It was just, yeah, it was magic. It was really like part of Leeds. It's really well known in Leeds for its unusual cocktails. We never did anything, never did any woo-woos or anything like, or sex on the beach, where Alice calls it a wank in the sand. We didn't do anything like that. It was magic. It was really good.
Yeah. And I guess the beautiful thing for me, spent a lot of time down in Poison watching it grow and personally kind of building relationships with people who've come down there. And it was really special to see it get to the point where people have been down, loved it so much, they've gone away and they've told people and they've told people and they've told people. And suddenly by the end, the start of 2019 was, it was just really positive. We just had so many people coming back and loving it. And the creativity of the drinks were building, it was moving forwards. And even things like the playlist, we started with the rule that we had a little CD hi-fi in the corner with linked up to the sound system. We'd just be playing jazz records. And in the end, we were playing Wu-Tang. We were playing all kinds of hip hop, jazz. There was such an eclectic playlist, which is really important to set the scene in itself. It could go from midweek being a really intimate date night, soft jazz, to on a weekend, a crazy madhouse where all the off-duty bartenders would sling down the stairs, and you know, and then it was just everything. It was fantastic, really special place.
Love it, love it, absolutely love it. You mentioned obviously a few, you know, the likes of Wu-Tang Clan there. One of the things on my podcast is that I asked every guest to go to the Erasing the Bar jukebox, and they're allowed to pick one song and one song only. Tom, you're up first. What would you go for?
It's like Elton John, Rocket Man, I think. Just that kind of song that you're hearing, it makes you, it's just goose pimples. And
absolutely.
Everyone can sing along with it as well. I love when, like you say, the old time, I can always go out and you should go up to jukebox, put a song on, and everyone would pub, even if you can't sing, it just everybody, do you know what I mean? Absolutely laugh. You're hugging people you've never even known before, and like, do you know what I mean? You're mates for life after that song, and then that's it. You never see him again. So, yeah, that'd be a song for me, I think, yeah.
Great shout. That's a great shout. Ellis, what about yourself?
This is a tricky one.
Checking his Spotify.
He's looking through his Spotify playlist. Yeah.
When we finally got Spotify down there, I started a playlist called The List of Death, which started off with a lot of jazz influence, but then grew to obviously include all the hip-hop and stuff. But
I used to have a playlist with a similar name, and I used to put that on when at the pub I worked at to try and get rid of everyone at the end of the night. It'd be songs that I loved, but they were dead depressing. It was like a lot of Elbow, Tom Waits, all that kind of stuff. Clear everyone out of the bar.
Wow. Nah, classic.
Yeah. I would say one of the best ones for the vibe down there was surprisingly the 19-2000 by Gorillaz. It had such a bassline beat to it, and it's an album that's pretty close to me. I grew up listening to it, and it was a late addition to the playlist, but it worked so well.
Big tune.
I mean, Gorillaz and Elton John, two very different artists, but I mean, you know,
you say that, but they've just done a song together, haven't they?
No,
I'm sure they have. Yeah.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Get to that yet, Danny, mate?
That was not intended. I didn't know that. No. I'm not plugging for Elton John and the Gorillaz. I wish I was. you're gonna have to prove this now.
Jeez. Have you seen?
I'm pretty sure they did a cartoon of him as well.
They've done this. I mean, you see this new sound thing they do on songs. They've done it with Gorilla, where I don't know. Just Google it. I can't remember. I find it, and it's. Basically, the sound runs around you, so it doesn't have it in you. It's nuts. It's like playing this here, then it'll play in that here, and then it'll feel like it's behind you, and it's just out of set of a head. Oh, it's nuts.
Oh, I think I've heard stuff like that before. That's incredible. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That Elton John cartoon.
That's Elton John.
What are the chances? What are actually the chances of that?
Yeah,
absolutely. Unbelievable. There's another feature on the podcast as well. So obviously I mentioned Erasing the Bar, where we get the guests to nominate their favourite bar, pub or nightclub in the UK. And at the end of the series, we'll be putting out a vote to all the followers and listeners to say, right, okay, this is number one, number two, number three, etc. So do you think if I put you on the spot right now, you could narrow it down to one place?
Yes.
Ellie, you go first.
I guess it's just been like a second home in Leeds for the majority of the time I've been here, but it's got to be North Bar. It's just a super eclectic place. Loads of really interesting people drink there, and the craft beer selection there has just been insane. I actually worked there for a couple of years just before starting Poison. Just lucky enough to taste some of the most incredible world beers, some phenomenal Belgian stuff, all the wacky new age stuff coming from New Zealand and the US and stuff like this. It was brilliant. And again, like the music was really open, some really interesting stuff on there.
Like
it just had a really kind of woody bar feel to it as well. It was
proper bar. Like it. What about yourself, Tom?
I think if I was going to go for anyone, it'd be the Hoot and Nanny Bar up in Inverness. It's the most wildest place you can go in. It's got three tiers to it. Cracking, all the blokes are in kilts. It's just like a centre for Inverness. There's live music every night. So basically, they have this big table in the middle where anyone can just rock up with an instrument and play. And then you go upstairs, it gets like a proper venue and it goes even higher. I've just spent many a nights lost in it, and
they're the best venues.
Yeah, coming out, it's like just like say a proper pub, floor, sticky floor, great beer, anything really goes. Particularly, there's not much that's not allowed. To get kicked out, it's pretty impressive. But it's just a good old boozer, a really like slapstick kind of bit. One of them boozers where you walk out, see you, mate. Yeah, see you, like mates for life, and then never see him again.
Did it have a certain kind of music, or was it one of those places that had like a certain vibe on one floor and a one?
Yeah. So it's like a bit more like proper Scottish music where everyone up and dancing down below. Then it'll have a proper band on, and then it was like a kind of tried to do a nightclub on the top floor.
Like it.
Which is quite funny.
Not just one flight of stairs to fall down, three. So I'm the clumsiest person in the world. If there's a flight of stairs, I will fall down it. So I'll hold my kilt as I do that. Love it. Well, as and when we can, chaps, we'll have to either go to Leeds for that night out. We'll have to go to Inverness for that night out. I know,
family. Well, I'm waiting for the poison pop up.
Yeah. Tell you what, we possibly could do if once allowed, even if it's like a household sit together, we can come down and bring the bar to every one of you two lads are. We could do a podcast around the bar where others can make drinks for you live. And we can
bring it down to the brewery, and we'll do a big thing at the brewery. That
don't be awesome. Yeah, the power of Zoom. How about amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Ellis, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you both. We will, I'm sure, it won't be the first time we meet. We will sort something out in the future, as and when we can. Yeah. Danny, anything else from you, mate?
So, if anyone wants to get hold of your gym, boys, where are they going to get it, and what's the perfect serve?
Yeah, so you can visit underwoodcollective.co.uk, and it's in the shop on there. Perfect serve. We've really left it open. We actually did a U-turn against Perfect Serve. Because it's the gin flavor is so intense and so applicable, we say just get creative, try things.
Yeah, I like that.
So yeah, it's www.underwoodcollective.co.uk.
Spot on. Well, chaps, thank you for joining, and we'll see you very soon.
Thank you very much for your time, Neff.
Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers, boys. Nice to see you.
Let's go, let's hit the bar.
That was a really interesting interview, that, wasn't it, Dan?
Yeah, I think the guys are obviously very passionate and they speak very well about the product, and it just goes to show all these independent brands, there's these passionate people behind them that are putting everything into it, you know.
And like I say, I've said on the call, power of Zoom, it looks like we've got a few collaboration opportunities in the future, so watch this space.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it'd be great when we can all get together and we'll do a pop-up bar and have everyone that's been on the guests on the podcast, and we'll have a big meet-up and a drink.
100%. Looking forward to that. Well, thanks for joining Friday Nights with Farmyard Ales. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been a bit of a ride for us because this is a brand new thing, so please bear with us. We want feedback. We want to hear your suggestions, and also we want to hear your drunk stories, so please do get in touch. Great news is we've collaborated with Underwood, and they've given us a discount code for the podcast listeners. Dan, what's that discount code?
UWPOD25.
For 25% off your future orders. Love it. Perfect. Thank you for joining me again. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, we'll see you next month. And we've got a brand new guest on next month. Dan, have you got any indication as to who it is yet?
I've got a few guys lined up, so I'll leave it a surprise for now. But yeah, hopefully we'll see you next month.
Let's can't wait.